On Fifth Sundays, we do something different. We take a detour. And this year, we've been looking at stories that involve animals in the Bible. And the series is All God's Creatures. Today, we're going to be discussing a talking donkey. What is more fun than a talking donkey in a story, right? So we're going to be reading from the story of Balaam today. It's in Numbers 22, if you want to follow along. The words on the screen are the ones that I shared with the kids early on. So they're from the New Living Translation, and it's just a selection from Numbers 22, verses 1 to 31 to keep the story moving forward. So it might be a little different than what you have if you have a Bible open today. But let's dig into the story of a talking donkey from Numbers 22. Here we go. The people of Israel traveled to the plains of Moab and camped east of the Jordan River across from Jericho. And Balak, the Moabite king, had seen everything the Israelites did to the Amorites. And when the people of Moab saw how many Israelites there were, they were terrified. The king of Moab said to the elders of Midian, "This mob will devour everything in sight, like an ox devours grass in the field." So Balak, king of Moab, sent messengers to call Balaam, the son of Beor, who was living in his native land of Pethor near the Euphrates River. His message said, "Look, a vast horde of people has arrived from Egypt. They cover the face of the earth and they're threatening me. Please come and curse these people for me because they are too powerful for me. Then perhaps I will be able to conquer them and drive them from the land. I know that blessings fall on any people you bless and curses fall on people you curse." Balak's messengers, who were elders of Moab and Midian, set out with money to pay Balaam to place a curse upon Israel. They went to Balaam and delivered Balak's message to him. "Stay overnight here," Balaam said. "In the morning, I will tell you whatever the Lord directs me to say." So the officials from Moab stayed there with Balaam. That night, God came and told Balaam, "Do not go with them. You are not to curse these people, for they have been blessed." The next morning, Balaam got up and told Balak's officials, "Go on home. The Lord will not let me go with you." So the Moabite officials returned to King Balak and reported, "Balaam refused to come with us." Then Balak tried again. This time, he sent a larger number of even more distinguished officials than those he had sent the first time. They went to Balaam and delivered this message to him. "This is what Balak says. Please don't let anything stop you from coming to help me. I will pay you very well and do whatever you tell me. Just come and curse these people for me." But Balaam responded to Balak's messengers, "Even if Balak were to give me his palace filled with silver and gold, I would be powerless to do anything against the will of the Lord my God. But stay here one more night, and I will see if the Lord has anything else to say to me." That night, God came to Balaam and told him, "Since these men have come for you, get up and go with them. But do only what I tell you to do." So the next morning, Balaam got up, saddled his donkey, started off with the Moabite officials, but God was angry that Balaam was going, so he sent the angel of the Lord to stand in the road to block his way as Balaam and two servants were riding along. Balaam's donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road with a drawn sword in his hand. So the donkey bolted off the road into a field, but Balaam beat it and turned it back onto the road. Then the angel of the Lord stood at the place where the road narrowed between two vineyard walls. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, it tried to squeeze by and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall. So Balaam beat the donkey again. Then the angel of the Lord moved farther down the road and stood in a place too narrow for the donkey to get by at all. This time when the donkey saw the angel, it lay down under Balaam. In a fit of rage, Balaam beat the animal again with his staff. Then the Lord gave the donkey the ability to speak. "What have I done to you that deserves your beating me three times?" it asked Balaam. You have made me look like a fool," Balaam shouted. Which, by the way, if you're talking to a donkey, yeah. "If I had a sword with me, I would kill you. But I am the same donkey you have ridden all your life," the donkey answered. "Have I ever done anything like this before?" "No," Balaam admitted, and then the Lord opened Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the roadway with a drawn sword in his hand. Balaam bowed his head and fell face down on the ground before him. So Balaam is a little bit of a complicated character in the Bible. This is not his only appearance. He'll make another appearance later on in the story of Israel. He is mentioned in the New Testament. We'll get to that. There's a lot happening here. This story kind of leaves us with as many questions as answers sometimes. So we're just going to keep focused on this particular chapter of the life of Balaam. But a little background, the people of Israel, sort of where this happens in the span of what happens in the Old Testament as a whole. The people of Israel have already experienced the Exodus. They've been wandering around in the desert, in the wilderness for a really long time. They are now approaching the promised land. They're right on the cusp of realizing this promised land that God was going to give them. And now we arrive at this story. God has been with them when they faced other threats like the Amorites that were mentioned. And so King Balak, he knows. He's heard the stories, and that is why he is afraid. Now, this is where I usually would show you the first video from the kids. But we had a few things happen this week. First of all, we had some technical snafus. Second of all, we had some issues with, we didn't have as many respondents. It's a busy summertime. And so all that being said, I actually don't really have much video-wise to share with you. But I wanted to show you the pictures of these children that so graciously decided to send in some answers. So there they are. They're at least going to be on the screen in this capacity, even if we can't see much video-wise. So they were going to talk about what makes them afraid. I'll be honest, I got their responses, and I'm like, well, I don't think I asked very good questions this time, because the answers were actually not something that was easy to put together on top of everything else. But I asked them about being afraid. Why? Because in this story, King Balak is afraid. And what does he do? And what can we learn about the things that he does when he's afraid? So the first thing that we read that Balak does is he seeks out Balaam. You probably heard the phrase, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That dates back to like the early 2nd century BC. It's an ancient proverb. It's something that became very popular in Europe in the 1700s as those nations were sort of battling against one another. For us, as Americans, it's probably the most applicable during a very particular time in our history that is represented by this picture up here. I saw some of you already like looking and pointing and trying to figure this out. So this is from World War II, and seated on this bench, you have starting on the left, Winston Churchill. In the middle, you have FDR, and then on the right, you have Joseph Stalin. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. They were faced with a common enemy of Nazi Germany. And so these guys got together, the two on the left, of whom were not great pals with the guy on the right. They didn't trust each other one bit, but they knew that they had to come together because they had a common enemy. King Balak, we don't know that he has much of a relationship with Balaam, but he realizes Balaam is somebody that is somebody he needs in his corner because he has a threat that he needs to be taken care of. We do this in our lives sometimes. When we feel afraid, when we're scared, we form maybe partnerships with people or things in order to help us out. And sometimes they are short-lived and relatively harmless. Other times, not so much. The things that we will reach out for when we feel afraid. What else does King Balak do? Well, he speaks in what I would call overestimated hyperbole. Did you catch some of the wording? There's a vast horde of people. I don't think that's a complimentary phrase. A vast horde of people. They cover the face of the earth. Okay, come on. They cover the face of the earth. It's interesting, and in the Old Testament, that's the same language used as of the locusts in the Exodus story. They cover the face of the earth. And then he says, and they will devour everything in sight. Wow. They'll devour everything in sight. Huge, sweeping, hyperbolic generalizations come from him. And guys, we do this too. When we become afraid, we take a threat, sometimes a legitimate one, and we expand it. We make it bigger than potentially it actually is. You're familiar with the phrase, to make a mountain out of a molehill. Now, I've never seen a molehill personally. I don't think that there are any that are mountainous on their own, but that's what we do. We take threats, we get scared, and we magnify them. Sometimes we even create threats that aren't actually there because we get fearful. We see this happen in the story. And then the last thing, Balak wants to curse those who make him afraid. Now, of course, in this story, he's reaching out for a curse that is this spiritually empowered, authoritative utterance from someone like Balaam that is going to give him some sort of divine advantage in defeating his enemy. Now, we generally don't think of curses the same way today, but I think it's true that we feel like we want to curse those who make us afraid, those who make us uncomfortable even. We want to speak against them. So in this story, we learn about what King Balak does when he's afraid, and maybe are invited to ask ourselves, what do we do when we are afraid? Do we forget that the God of angel armies is on our side, that he is a friend of mine? And do we wander into some of these patterns when we become afraid? There was one line that really stood out to me in the message that King Balak sends to Balaam. It was this one: I know that blessings fall upon any people you bless, and curses fall upon people you curse. I thought, okay, that sounds really familiar, and then I realized quickly why. Because it's very similar to what God says of himself during the covenant with Abraham in Genesis 12. I'll make you a great nation. I will bless you. I'll make your name great. You'll be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. So we're left with this question: when we're afraid, whom will we seek? Where will we go? Will we trust in the God of angel armies who is always on our side? Or will we wander in some of these other patterns that we see play out in the person of King Balak in this story? And it's interesting, if you think of the timing of this story, this is right towards the end of the wilderness wandering. They're getting ready to enter into the promised land. And if you know the story of that, they eventually settle in the promised land, and the book of Judges tells us the story of them doing this. Because a lot of times they're trusting the Lord to be the one that brings the blessing, but other times they trust in other gods instead of, or in addition to, the God of their exodus. Who will we trust, especially when we are afraid? Now, this is where I would usually show you the second video of the children answering questions. I told you I don't have much, but listen, I have a 30-second video that you just have to see. Really, you'll appreciate it. You'll thank me. So one of the questions for the kids was, what would you do if you were in Balaam's situation and you had an animal talk to you? Like, how would you react? How would you respond if you were confronted with a talking animal? 34 seconds of your life, I promise, you're going to really appreciate it. So are we ready on the soundboard with the audio? We're good to go. So here we go. This is them answering the question, what would you do if you're confronted with a talking animal?
I would probably freak out and be like, Mommy!
I would just talk to him.
Sadie, what would you do if an animal talked to you?
I would just talk to him and just walk away from him and ride him and run fast with him, and I'll fly down the rainbow with him.
So I'll translate for you. One of the things I love about that clip is the progression. One child says, I would freak out and run for mom. The next one's like, I would just talk back to the animal. And then the third one, I believe all that was said was, I would talk to him, I would walk away from him, I would ride him, I would run fast with him, and then I would slide with him down a rainbow. That was the end. So I was texting with mom, and she's like, in case it's not clear, the animal being imagined was a unicorn during that entire time. See, 30 seconds of your, that's all it took, 30 seconds of your life. So Balaam is confronted in the story with some pressure and some temptation. It seems that Balak is trying really hard to make him an offer he can't refuse. Now, as a quick side note, I've never seen The Godfather, which I got roasted for during the ABF time today. So I've been misusing this phrase, misquoting it for a long time, because I thought this meant an offer that was just so good you would be foolish to actually pass it up. That is not what that means. I looked it up this week. It means something completely different than that. It means if you don't take this offer, your life might be in danger if you do. So, but it's Balak really wants to make an offer that is hard to refuse. The first time he makes his request, we're told he sends out elders from Moab and Midian with money. That's all we find out. Elders with money. Elders would have been trustworthy, wise representatives. A payment was expected. If you were to approach someone like Balaam in the ancient world and ask for what they're asking for, you would bring a payment with you. Balaam considers the request. Stay overnight. I'll talk to you in the morning. Interestingly, in the morning, he doesn't tell them the whole story of what God revealed to him. He just says, I can't go with you. He doesn't talk about, like, these people are actually blessed and not cursed. He leaves that part out, which may be part of the reason that after the first request is communicated back to King Balak, I think what he hears is, for this price, I can't make it work. Because what does he do? Sends another request. And what comes with this request? Did you notice in the text? It's great. He sends a larger number of people, even more distinguished officials than the first time, and they say, we will pay you very well and do whatever we're told if you'll just come and curse these people for us. That escalated quickly. From a few elders and a payment to distinguished officials, I picture in my mind like this grand caravan of really, really influential people with all sorts of accoutrements and everything like that. That's what I picture happening here. And Balaam knows that's what's on the table because he says in his response, even if the king would give me his palace full of silver and gold, I couldn't go against what the Lord has revealed to me. And he should have stopped with, I'm powerless to do anything against the will of the Lord. But he didn't stop there. Instead, he says, stay here one more night and let me see if the Lord has anything else to say to me. He's already gotten his answer, but he wants a different answer. Stay one more night. I'll inquire and find out if there's anything else that the Lord has to say. He is swayed by these temptations. Are we the same today? Are we swayed by powerful people, important people, influential people? Are we swayed by promises of wealth? Are we swayed by the allure of more control or more influence for ourselves? Are we willing to compromise in cooperation with people who promise us or seem to promise us some of these things that we find to be so, so tempting? I think sometimes we do. Now, let's give credit where credit is due. At least Balaam pauses and reflects. Overnight, let me wait. He doesn't make these in-the-moment, instant decisions. But he entertains this second request overnight from Balak, the upgraded one. And it brings a really interesting point to the story because what does the Lord tell him that night? Go ahead and go. And so he does. And then God gets angry. Because Balaam did the thing that God told him he could do. You ever read that story and just kind of went, what's happening here? God said you could, and then you did, and then God got mad that you did the thing that he said you could do. That doesn't really make any sense. So what's sort of happening here in this story? Well, one possible way to look at it is the word that we read today, since, could maybe be translated if. So it said, since these men have come for you, go with them. You could render it, if these men come for you. And some scholars would say he didn't wait for them to come again. He just got up and went. And so that reveals his motives. But even if you go with the since avenue, since they've come with you, it's clear that Balaam is really excited and proactive about taking this affirmative answer and going back to King Balak. We read that he got up in the morning. That word can sometimes be translated at dawn, like first thing, out of bed, popped and ready to go, like a kid at Christmas. He is apparently excited. And what's the first thing he does? He loads up his donkey. He is ready to roll. I read one commentary that puts it this way, and I think it's great. It said, God was reading this person's heart, seeing mixed motives there, and the desire for gain. He, in effect, says to him, very well, have your own way. and go with them. But then he says, this is sort of in the spirit of Psalm 106:15, which reads, he gave them their request, but sent leanness into their souls. Sent leanness into their souls. God saw mixed motives. God saw into the heart and allowed Balaam to take this journey. Now, thankfully, we have other parts of Scripture that tell us more about the character Balaam. In Jude chapter 1, it's talking about the people who pervert the grace of God as a license for immorality on the strength of the dreams of ungodly people. Woe unto them because they have rushed for profit into Balaam's error. 2 Peter chapter 2 says it similarly. They've left the straight way and wandered off to follow the way of Balaam, who loved the wages of wickedness. So here's what I think we have happening. I think there are times, and in Balaam's instance, it's the persistent stubbornness he has to give into these temptations of wealth or prestige or greater control. But there are times that God will grant us the freedom to follow our hearts, even though doing so takes us away from where we should be and frustrates his desires for us. I think one of the greatest instances is the story of the prodigal son in Jesus' ministry. That son comes to the father and says, hey, I'm out of here. I'm done. I wish you were dead. Give me my inheritance rights. I'm gone. And the father had no obligation whatsoever to honor that request, and yet he chose to do so because he knew the heart of his son. Now, if you know the rest of the story, the son wanders away and eventually comes home. I think that God will let us follow our hearts sometimes, even to our own detriment, even when it frustrates his own desires for us and for the path that he wants us to take. So Balaam undertakes this journey, I think maybe hoping that God will change his mind by the time they get back and be like, that's fine, go ahead and curse these people after all, because then he gets all of the wealth and the prestige and everything that he has been promised. This is not a pleasurable journey for Balaam. It becomes clear pretty quickly, because not once, not twice, but three times an angel of the Lord stands in Balaam's way, even though he can't see what's happening. But who can see what's happening? A donkey. The donkey can see what's happening and is reacting appropriately, even though Balaam can't see what's happening. One detour takes them off the road into a field. One detour goes through where there are two vineyard walls that are so tight that Balaam's foot gets crushed against one of them. And then the final one, there's no room to go around in any way, and so the donkey just lays down on the ground and gives up. And how does Balaam respond every time? He beats the animal. The last time we're told, in a fit of rage, he beats the animal. And what's interesting is we find out later in the story that this is really out of character for this donkey. It's not like this donkey has ever behaved before, but at no point does Balaam stop and go, there's something going on here. There's something strange happening. At no point in time does this really strange occurrence, three of them, lead him to be in any way reflective about what might be happening around him. And my friends, I would like to say that we don't act like that, but sometimes we do. Sometimes we are so stubborn that we fight God's direction and God's guidance for us. And what did it take for Balaam to finally see? It took a conversation with a donkey. A conversation with a donkey is what finally led to his eyes being opened so that he could see the deeper spiritual realities around him. Now, I partly put this up because it's the most famous talking donkey I'm aware of in the Shrek movies. I was told after Simplicity Service that there's a mule named Francis, apparently, that was a talking donkey at some... That's a little before my time, so some of you are nodding your heads. Great. Well, this is the most famous talking donkey that I'm aware of. But I pasted the picture in, and I realized, this is great, because if you've seen the Shrek movies, you know that a lot of the time, the donkey makes Shrek aware of things that he otherwise doesn't know. Like, he is clueless, and the donkey sees what's happening and has to fill Shrek in on, yeah, hello, big guy. Don't you see what's happening? It takes a conversation with a talking donkey for him to have his eyes opened. And in that moment, he sees things as they truly are. He understands the power and the presence of God around him. Are we willing to have our eyes open? Do we want to have our eyes opened to see the things that God wants for us to see, even though sometimes we are just stubbornly chasing after our own way to our own detriment? And I want to close by saying this. Probably all of us in this room have one or two or 12 reasons why we believe God can't use us. I'm not blank enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not faithful enough. I'm not obedient enough. I don't have enough of the Bible memorized. I'm not responsive enough. I'm not courageous enough. Blah, 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 on and on and on. Listen, if God can use a donkey, he can use you. Regardless of what you think, your weaknesses, your limitations, if God can use a donkey to open the eyes of people around to his power and presence, don't for a second think that God can't use you to do exactly the same thing. So let's finish up by focusing on a few reflections, some questions that allow this truth that we've been looking at today sink a little bit deeper into our hearts. Here's the first one. How often do you think or act based on fear, perhaps seeing some of King Balak's reactions in your own life? Secondly, are you tempted to resist the guidance of God in favor of the prestige of influential people or the allure of wealth or the desire for more control? Third, have you been frustrated or even outraged with your circumstances recently, and have you stopped to consider what God might be trying to teach you or reveal to you during those times? And then lastly, in this time of silence and reflection, bring your weaknesses and your inadequacies to God, release them, and invite the Holy Spirit to use you to help open the eyes of other people, maybe even open your eyes to God's presence and God's power. I'm going to click through these one more time while we start this time of silence. Whatever grabs your heart, whatever pricks your soul, if it's helpful to close your eyes, bow your head, you're welcome to do that. And then after a little bit of silence and reflection, I'm going to close us with a word of prayer.